Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Full EV or plug-in hybrid? Go electric with Kia. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie and 51551, wash your hands. Now, on Friday, the issue was raised by a caller of an article in the Irish Catholic about people who die by suicide. It was written by one of their columnists, Brendan O'Regan, and he pointed out that still in the Catholic Church, it is a sin, believe it or not, to die by suicide. And it's just upset so many people, not just the fact that Mr. O'Regan wrote it, which he would say, I'm just writing what is Catholic Church doctrine, it's not often spoken about, but the fact that it still exists in this day and age. Now, by the way, a lot of people say, who cares what the Catholic Church think anymore? But anyway, the fact that this issue is there for so many people in Ireland who would regard themselves as Catholics is deeply, deeply hurtful, but has raised the issue in these difficult, difficult times of death by suicide, and how people, more importantly, and we've been giving it more numbers, can get help, because that's the key. And I suppose one of the issues that upset people about the Catholic Church still stigmatising suicide or death by suicide as a sin is that exact point, that it does stigmatise. And we've been asked, and it's been argued for so long, stop stigmatising mental health issues, stop stigmatising people with depression, stop stigmatising people who have suicidal ideation, because apparently, according to WHO, 5% of the population wake up every day with some form of upset or depression that would prompt suicidal ideation. Thankfully, obviously, things move on that day in a positive way, and they talk to people or meet people or family or friends or whatever, and the figures are much lower, thankfully. But anyway, Gillian has contacted us. Gillian, good afternoon. Hello, Gillian. It's Gillian. Oh, sorry, Gillian's not... Okay. Peter, good afternoon.
Hey, Joe.
You heard Friday's programme, and you're... Your story is related to your brother, Derek.
That's correct. I was listening last Friday, Joe. I was trying to get through, but I couldn't. Your phones were probably jammed. But I just found the show, I think the comments in the magazine were disgusting, you know, to say suicide is still a sin in the eyes of the church. In this day and age, I think that stigma needs to be completely and utterly removed by the church. They have to remove it, because it's causing so many people so many hardships. My own brother, Derek, took his own life in 2007. Mm. And for me to think that he committed a sin in the eyes of the church, that angers me, first of all, and it upsets me.
And Peter, does it bother you?
It bothers me. It does. It's bothered me since I heard the show last Friday, to think that someone like Derek, who was left with no choice but to go out and take his own life, would be considered a sinner in the eyes of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
You know, for a man who lived a normal life, who was a law-abiding citizen, to be branded a sinner because he thought in his own head he had no other options but to take his own life, I think it was wrong.
Okay, well, that's fairly said and well said. Stay there, Peter. Michael O'D is in the Midlands. Michael, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you?
Not too bad, Joe. Not too bad.
And
I don't care. I am a Catholic, but I don't care what the church thinks, right? Because I was a bad sufferer with depression.
Mm-hmm.
Very bad. From the time I was 13 or 14.
Okay.
And when I got to 47 or 8, I just got overwhelming and I had to go get help.
Yeah.
And it took 5 or 6 years to get me help or to get me medication right. And thanks be to God, I'm okay now. But I just want to explain to them people the pain in your head when you have bad depression.
Mm.
The pain in your head, Joe, is indescribable. When you have bad depression,
yeah.
Joe, I went to sleep at night for 3 or 4 years and in my late 40s, praying that I wouldn't wake up in the morning. I was as close to suicide as any man in Ireland. Only I loved my wife, my kids, and my grandkids too much.
Brilliant.
I just couldn't do it to them.
Because depression is an evil, evil illness. It is an illness, just like diabetes or lupus or any other of those awful illnesses. It is an illness. And it should be, it's not, and just as diabetes and lupus or CF is not a sin, depression or suicidal ideation is not a sin either. Dying by suicide does not help.
Sorry, Joe, for interrupting you, but like people that didn't suffer with don't know the turmoil in your head.
Yeah, exactly.
It's unbelievable, Joe. Unbelievable. And, like, the people that commit suicide, Joe, do you know, committing a sin would be the saddest thing away from their mind. Like, that wouldn't worry. Like, Joe, I'll just give you a description, Joe. And I had a bad accident last September, an attack by Ebola. I'd done 4 months in hospital.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Joe, I told your researcher there.
Yeah.
If you said to me today, which would you prefer to go back to, the bull attack or the depression, I'll go with the bull 1,000 times.
My God.
Now, I had a broken crushed rib cage, a broken back, a broken arm, and a punctured lung.
My God.
But Joe, I will take that back in a heartbeat before I ever want to go back to depression. That's how bad the pain of depression is.
Yeah.
And like, there's, I don't know, they're going to have to go back to the schools, to the teenagers, Joe, and try and educate them and let them know, Joe, it's okay to feel bad.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong, Joe. And, like, if they have the youngsters educated, their friends or someone might just come, see things, if some other friend was suffering. And any word, any nice word from anyone, Joe, is a help.
Is it, Michael? You tell me your experience, please, and how you managed to overcome what so many people go through.
Joe, my wife and my family.
Yeah.
My wife and my family. And even people that didn't even know I had it, when they heard I had it, just a few nice words, Joe. Yeah. And, like, the services, Joe, I know people will say there's no services there. There is service there. It's just for someone to get it into their head to go do the job and stop thinking about the stigma, Joe.
And do you think this issue that the Catholic Church, and I'm reading more over the weekend, more recent stuff written by various theologians. Now, I know there's, but anyway, the bottom line is suicide is still a sin. And a lot of them are saying, well, you know, there's nuances. There should be no nuances. Suicide is not a sin.
Yeah, well,
it shouldn't be stigmatized. Now, as I say, a lot of people in this day and age are not bothered to tuppence. But in terms of, as I said, what Peter said, it's part of the stigmatization of mental illness.
I don't know, Joe. Don't really want to get into it with the church. I am a Catholic, a pastor Catholic. I'd have good old faith enough, right?
Yeah.
But, like, Joe, they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They just don't know what they're talking about. Like, and, like, Joe, when you have that mental pain in your head, the Catholic Church, Joe, you don't be thinking about the church. Or I never talk about the church or anything
course,
like that, Joe.
Of course.
You just, like, I don't know what to say about that, Joe.
Okay, well, no, you've said it all, Michael. In fairness, you've said it so eloquently in your frustration there that it's just so it's so out of kilter now with what the world is, what people are going through. Sorry, Peter.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. What I was trying to say there was as that other gentleman was saying, it's not going through your head. I suffer with mental health issues myself. Mm. I don't think of the Catholic Church's opinion on me when I am going through my emotions.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the stigma left on the family. That's That's my issue with it. It's mm-hmm. it's the branding of that person, and then the branding moves on to the family when they're dead, because the person who's dead doesn't know they're going to be branded. If you understand my point.
Yeah.
You know, it's the family, and if the family are devout Catholics and they're very religious, well then, in the eyes of God, of their God or the religion that they're with, this point it's the Catholic Church, well then their brand is, they're stigmatized. And that's what needs to change. It has to stop.
And it's deep in our, given that most of us were reared as Catholics and our parents before us and our grandparents before us.
Yeah, the two of us, myself and Derek, were altar boys of St. Luke's Church in Kilmore West. You know, so we would have had a connection to the church there in the area. Our mother was one of the probably the most frequent mass goers in the community. You know, every Sunday we were marched up the road to serve, and we were marched back down, and we were marched back up again that evening for Mass. Yeah. You know, so this thing is stuck with the family now, because, oh, Derek killed himself. Oh. How many countless other families have been stigmatised because their loved ones have taken their own life?
Would you say to anyone, God forbid, Derek died of leukemia or cancer or whatever?
No, I know.
And it should be the same.
Yeah.
That it's not their fault. It is an illness. People, the only difference, I suppose, with depression, as you know, Mick, Michael O'Dea, the only difference with depression is when you become unwell, your initial reaction is to go looking for medical help. With depression, it tells you not to go looking for medical help because you won't be able to beat me. That's how evil and insidious that illness is. Bob Carley is CEO of Suicide or Survive, and Bob, good afternoon.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Good. Bob, I know you wear a number of hats. This is where the debate started. Unfortunately, it's where it started, but people wanted to talk about it, so they should be allowed to talk about it. Is suicide a sin?
Okay, so this wouldn't be my Suicide or Survive hat. This would be my own faith hat, just to share this with you. And funny enough, I was doing a webinar last night with a church on mental health, and I shared the verse that Jesus shared when he came to the temple on his very first day of ministry. And he said, the Spirit of God is now on me, for he's called me to heal the brokenhearted, to set at liberty the captive, and to unbind those who are tied. And I think that's got to be the attitude of our faith rather than judgment, that it's like the church should be the first point of help and comfort and consoling and understanding and healing, rather than people being driven away by another stigma, because mental health and suicide is so stigmatized, people just don't know where to go. So I always think it's really sad that our faith would be the thing that stigmatizes the most. So for me, I just think it's people are in emotional distress. They need help. They need comfort. They need succor. They need love and support. And that's where I stand on it. So does that answer your question?
Well, suicide is not a sin.
No.
And it's not helpful for anyone to refer to it or to get in. Like, why doesn't the church come out and say it? Just clearly, we do not regard suicide as a sin. Full stop. No ifs or buts. No dancing on the angels on the head of a pin or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. So how can people who do fall into depression and do suffer from suicidal ideation? Because that statistic I quoted the WHO statistic about 5% comes from, you were the one that unearthed that. But what can we do to help people?
Well, to help, I suppose, for us in Suicide Advice...
To help ourselves, by the way. Sorry, I shouldn't be saying people as if those who suffer from suicide are others. They are us.
That's us.
They are me, you, everybody listening from time to time.
And in Suicide Survive, we always, there's a statistic that says that 1 in 4 struggle with their mental health. We say it's 4 in 4. So that breaks the stigma. It's something we all have. We all have dental health. We all have mental health, and we have to look after it. For some of us, occasionally that dip gets so low that we need a hand up. We need someone to reach out and say, look, I see you're struggling. Come and learn some tips, tools, and techniques. Learn ways that you can learn to want to live rather than want to die. And I've never met anyone, Joe, either as a therapist or working in Suicide Survive, that wants to die. It's just people don't know how to live. It is such a pain that you carry in your heart or in your head that you just can't see the light. So even saying to people, one of your callers was saying that his wife and his family helped, it's that voice of hope. So sometimes you can't hold your own hope. You need people to feed hope to you. So Suicide or Survive, when it was started by Carolyn McGuigan, who was her founder, she had her own journey through suicide and actually was saved in an A&E. She was brought back to life in A&E and said, I don't want anyone to go through what I've gone through. So she set up Suicide or Survive, and she inaugurated a project and a program called the Eden Program, which is a 26-week program for people who want to look at alternatives to taking their own life, to a better life, to living their life to the full, because they were created on purpose, for purpose, with purpose. And it's just to reignite that hope for life in people's hearts, that they would say, you know what, tomorrow might be a better day. And the program is called the Eden Program. We run 4 a year. We're actually recruiting for them at the minute. And it's just people come together in a group to share their experiences, to open their hearts in an unstigmatized environment, Joe. It's probably the one place where people can actually talk about suicide, where everybody doesn't jump up and say, no, don't be doing that, don't be talking about that, don't be saying that. Mm. It's a place where people can actually just say, these thoughts are going through my head, and I think I'm crazy. And then to hear someone else saying, no, you're not crazy, you're just under emotional pressure and emotional distress, and here's things we can do to alleviate that. So it really is, it's, you know, for me, I suppose what both my faith and suicide is, like, both, I believe, trade in hope. And I think that if we can speak that more into people's lives than fear and stigma and ostracization, all those things that put people on the outside of the circle of love, we need to get away from them and just say, come on in. So Suicide or Survive, we are definitely so. So the Eden program, it's coordinated by a woman called Paula Lawler. And it's just, I just can't say enough. This.
But the difference in the Eden program, Bob, is that you do, in one sense, you do get close to the sharpness of it, and that you're saying, if you want, well, correct me if I'm wrong, if you want to, please participate in this program if you wish to commit to it. But one of the prerequisites, so to speak, is that you have to be in a very, very difficult place. Is it you, who is it for people who have attempted suicide or had suicidal thoughts?
Or have suicidal ideation. And that, you know, sadly, Joe, that's not a small number.
I know.
It's that if you think about 5%, so for every community of 100 people, there's 5%. And you see, normally with wellness, the problem with conversations on wellness and mental health is it usually leans towards the, come on, we're all going to be fine. And,
yeah,
you know,
we're in this together. And,
space. And if I'm in a really bad space, I'll just go, that conversation's not for me. I'm actively thinking of ending my life. And when you're in that space, you just need to find a place where it's okay to say, listen, I'm actually really on the edge here. And that's who we're reaching out to. It's like, and it's a long term, because it takes you a while to get into that space. So it's going to take a while to ease yourself out of it. So it's incremental, small steps, rather than the big jumps.
But you've
small things. Let's do small things.
But there's no guarantee that I can't get darker in this course. How do I?
If
I say to you on the second and at the beginning of the second session of the course, actually, my suicidal ideation is stronger than it was last week, Bob.
Yeah.
What would you say to me?
Well, see here, Joe. Here's the problem with mental health. Quite often, we remove that power from the person. Okay. So probably the best way to describe the journey with people is we can't walk it for you, but we can walk it with you. And always what I would say to people is like if your worry is that by the second day you might stick with the course, like even just give it a try, just even see. So it's like it's almost like saying that to say that would almost like saying, well, if I start taking tablets for a headache and it doesn't go within three hours, I'll just give up on the headache.
Okay.
Just what our experience has been for those, and honestly, Joe, most people who come on the Eden program stay on the Eden program.
Okay.
And for some people who've even just done two modules, we've had feedback from Zen that said, you know what, that was enough to hold me. That was enough to just give me the hope.
Are you saying that if you come to us and say, I have suicidal ideation, we will not chastise you, we will not give out to you, we will not say, get a grip, as people say, we will not say, think of all the good things in your life. We will say to you, it's an awful phrase, we want you to park that ideation and work, come along this journey and see how you get on.
Yeah, just put it on hold, because it's always an option.
You can't. Okay. Sorry, Joe. Come
is that
in
Peter
there.
Or Michael? Sorry, I'm
Peter here.
Peter, yeah, go on.
Peter,
whose brother
just
died.
I want to disagree with that last comment there. Okay. Put it on hold. You can't. These feelings can't be put on hold, no matter how hard you try. Mm-hmm. I suffer with my I've PTSD myself, Joe. I have depression and I have general anxiety disorder.
Okay.
And I have great days, and like everybody else, I have extremely bad days. You can't. These feelings can hit you at any time during the day, the night, during your sleep. They can wake you up. I've had countless sleepless nights. I mean, the slightest thing, you could be watching EastEnders or Coronation Street and something will trigger off something in the back of your mind somewhere, and that's it. You could take 6 weeks of being bedridden. You could take 6 weeks of not going outside the door, locking yourself into your house, locking yourself into a bedroom. These feelings can't be put on hold. So I don't agree with that comment of put it on hold. You can't put your feelings on hold. It's not possible.
I remember that was a phrase I came up with. But anyway, let Bob answer. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, no. I think like Peter's 100% correct, and I wouldn't say put the feelings on hold. I would say put the plan on hold. It's probably what better to say, Peter, because you're right. Your feelings are what they are, and we live with our feelings. And you know, in my journey with mental health, they've been very unpredictable, and they pop up at the time when I least expect them. Which can be frightening and scary and can drive me to a place of withdrawing, can drive me from a place where I don't want to talk to people. So really what we're saying is to people, like, just come along. If you think this would help you, you know, look it up online, see what we have to offer. We would never say, so one of the things we say in SOS is we don't say we save lives because you can't. We say that we give people the tips, tools and techniques, the help and support to save their own life, because it's always your own life. It's always your life. And you have to be at the center of your own mental health recovery and maintenance. And that, I suppose, is where we sit with the program. It's like, look, we will be one of your supports. And, you know, we don't want to take the place of families or friends or support networks. We're saying we'll be one of your supports. We have people who are qualified and expert through experience and expertise to help you consider other options and things that might help you, things that might support you to a better quality of life.
Okay, let me bring Michael O'Dea back in for a sec. Michael, does any of this resonate with you, Michael, in terms of...
Joe, it does, but Joe, I don't know what to say about it. Like, I'm not that articulate on it, but I was just, I suppose, maybe one of the lucky ones. I got the right medication, and I'm very, very good for the last 6 years. Right, very, very good.
But you said to me at one stage it took 5 or 6 years to get the proper help.
It took 5 or 6 years, okay. and a change of a psychiatrist as well. But that's no aspersion on the other side.
I know, but you kept going. You kept going.
I have a sober wife. All right.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
She just was there, and she kept me going.
Fantastic.
She didn't let me stop. Like, if I hadn't have the family support, Joe, I might not got there, Joe.
And that support can come, and for people in different scenarios, can come from a good friend, can come from a counsellor, can come from
anyone,
suicide survivors, Samaritans, if you ate a house, whatever.
Yeah.
Michael, by the way, people are ringing about this incredible incident you spoke. I'll just ask you quickly before the break. What happened with the ball when you say you would go through, even though you listed the injuries, didn't you, that you sustained when the ball hit? What happened that you were caught off guard?
Joe, a bull just attacked me, loading him one day into a lorry, and badly injured me. But I done 4 months in hospital. But I'm 85% or 90% back to normal now.
But it's just that incredible.
The only reason I mentioned that, Joe, was for a comparison.
And it was a powerful comparison. Michael.
Now, maybe Joe, a lot of listeners out there mightn't believe that.
And well, they heard it in your voice.
That is the truth, Joe.
Yeah.
That is the truth, Joe.
Now, I'm so sorry that you had to go through that awful attack by the bull to be able to make that comparison. And at the other end, the fact that you went through such awful depression as well, that again, you were able to make that comparison. But it is a powerful, powerful comparison. We wouldn't wish either on anybody.
Well, Joe, to be honest about it, the bull attack actually was bad, but it gave me a complete different perspective on life.
Okay.
Completely different perspective on life.
Okay.
completely different.
Michael, stay well. That's Michael O'Dea and Peter Fitzsimons. Thank you both. Uncle Bob, as we know him from Funny Friday, Bob Carley, the current acting CEO of Suicide Survive, is with us, and we'll talk to John after the break. 51551, Marchand.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
People are contacting us for reacting. They did all weekend reacting to the conversation on Friday, which was generated by a woman, Anne Holmes, who objected to a column in the Irish Catholic, which reminded Catholics, I suppose, if not everybody, that the Roman Catholic Church regards suicide as a sin. John, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
You, as you say in your contact here, I was very upset listening on Friday. Tell us the
sorry,
story.
Sorry, Joe, I just can't hear you too.
Okay.
Well.
You should be okay. You tell us you were very upset listening on Friday.
That's much better. Yeah. Well, it's just generally, I mean, you know, there was a lot being said last Friday, which, honestly, at this stage, I don't remember too much about it. Well, I do and I don't.
Well, the bottom, I suppose, the crux of it is the Catholic Church regards suicide as a sin.
Yeah, well, obviously, that's totally... It just doesn't count. I mean, if I tell you my experience, my son ended his own life 14 years ago. And up to that, I knew very little about suicide.
Yeah.
And I arrived out of the family home about 4 p.m. on the day that it happened later on that night. And my son was there, and with two of my younger children. Mm. And as soon as I walked in the door, I could smell the mood. He had been affected by an emotional upset.
Mm.
Now, the thing I noticed when I went in was that he was totally withdrawn and he was very quiet.
Okay.
And that wasn't usually his demeanor. You know, he wasn't loud or brash, but he was 19 years of age.
Yeah.
And it just struck me, and I sort of talked to him and engaged with him a little bit, but there was no response. He stayed in his bedroom a good bit as well. So I went to bed about 11 o'clock into watching television, and the next morning I found him.
Yeah.
And it taught me an awful lot about suicide.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing is we hear people saying that, you know, in the past, not as much now, that they were to blame and that they were selfish. Well, they're not to blame and they're not selfish, because basically how I describe it is, I mean, I've thought an awful lot about it. And what I feel is it's like changing channels on the TV. If I change a channel, I know it goes from one channel to the other.
Yeah.
But I don't know how that actually happens. The same happens, certainly in my son's case. That's what I believe happened. He was in a rational state of mind at a point in time. And for some reason, he went into an irrational frame of mind.
Okay, yeah.
The same as changing channels on the TV. We don't know how it happens. We know it happens, and because the basic thing is he has no fear of what he's going to do, which you and I would be afraid.
Yeah.
And sorry, I tend to get a little bit sort of mixed up here.
Yeah, but you're not mixed up. I'm interested in that you use the phrase "Chris ended his life."
He ended his own life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Within days and a week or two or three, you see, he left letters, and being there, the evening he died, and the letter, what he wrote in the letters, began to sort of. It would make me was thinking about it anyway, but to try and figure out what happened.
Yeah.
And the first thing was that it struck me was that he didn't commit anything.
Yeah.
Now, and I used to find it hurtful when I heard the term used. And the second thing is
because commit. The reason why all the language, rightly so, has to be extraordinarily careful is the word commit sounds like committed a crime.
Yeah, you commit something that's
commit,
not right,
yeah.
And that you're to blame for.
Yeah.
And he and then people say that people that end their own lives that they're selfish. Well, they're not selfish because they're irrational. They just move on to a different channel and that's it. They think about nothing else, and that's what they're going to do.
And the whole church position of the Roman Catholic Church, I hasten to add, is that suicide is a sin.
So that's ridiculous. I mean, if you're irrational, mm-hmm. how can you be to blame for what you do in that sense?
And you're going to be backed up, John, by Helen in Port Leash. Helen, good afternoon.
My call.
Hey.
I have been listening to people saying about depressed, they're selfish, and I thoroughly disagree with that. Mm-hmm. And I've learned from a scientific point of view is some event in life that's very upsetting for the person, they feel good hormones of endorphins and serotonin mm-hmm. are lessened and lessened as time goes by, and they go into a state of far from a feeling good. They become begin to feel very, very low, very bad. And my own experience was that I considered that I was feeling in so much emotional pain that I was only a burden to the other members of the family, and that I could solve that by taking my own life. My plan was to go to the river in the afternoon on a Sunday and end it there.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I...
And you say it's wrong to stigmatise the illness because that George needs to learn about brain chemicals. You mentioned them there earlier on, the fact that scientifically, people's brains do change as well, and that's what leads to suicidal ideation.
Exactly, Joe. It may be an event in their life like the loss of a job, breakup of a marriage relationship, and it may be the death of a person in the family, or from some other reason. The chemicals in the brain are not functioning to their full capacity, let's say the endorphins and the serotonins and other chemicals. And I looked this up and I have talked to my chemist about this and they've been very supportive. And I got past this by going to my doctor and telling him how I was feeling.
Yeah.
And he put me on an antidepressant and I gradually began to feel come up again and feel better again. And
the doctor put you, I know it doesn't work for everybody, but a doctor, it does work for a lot of people. The doctor put you on medication and that helped you.
Yes, various medications.
Proving that it is an illness.
Yes. Proving again that these chemicals in the brain are not functioning in the way they should be. And when you kickstart them and you begin to feel good again, it get past. Now, also, support is important. The chemist was...
Okay, I'm not helped by your line at the minute, Helen. But I think the sting of your point has been made. If I get a better line, we'll go back. Tony in Donegal. Helen was in Port Leisure. Thanks, Helen. Tony, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You're listening to this discussion.
Yeah, and last Friday, I was listening to it, and the terminology of people using the terminology of committing suicide, mm-hmm. that really gets to me. That, you know, I think it's. It would have been a crime way back, way back years and years ago. It's classed as a crime, but I mean, people who take their own lives don't commit anything, you know, they don't commit, they just take their own life, and that's it. This terminology, committing suicide, it's picking them out. You know,
yeah, but from my reading of what the Catholic Church currently preaches, they do preach, and they don't seem to preach about it a lot because I think so many clerics are probably embarrassed by it. It is a sin in the same way that a crime is a sin.
I don't agree with that at all.
Of course,
so
yeah,
my take on that too would be the Catholic Church would have been founded on the death of Jesus Christ, who we all, you know, mass and whatnot is all around. I mean, Jesus Christ took his own life. more or less. He,
well, he was crucified.
Gave himself up.
Yeah,
he gave himself up. He knew what was going to happen. He knew that, you know, we all know that story, like, he was sent by God the Father to save our sins, to save the world, and he gave his own life. I mean, he knew what he was doing. He could have stepped back from it and whatever, you know. But, I mean, this thing, you know, making it out to be people do something wrong, have to take their own life. You know, people do it for all kinds of reasons. People have mental health problems. People have alcohol problems. People have maybe family breakdown problems. You know, there's all kinds of things. And people might think, well, it's a handy way out. I mean, it's not an easy way out. They're not gaining anything.
Not at all.
You know, it's I had two brothers. Like, one would have been 22 years ago, and the other brother would have been over 31 years ago, you know, and you had to try and cope with it, and people ask you, you know, what happened, and you try to, you know, give a take at it, but you can't really give, there's no answer to it, you know, the only people that have an answer to it are, unfortunately, are the people that are gone, you know, the people that take their own life for whatever reason, that's the want out of this place.
And the fact that you, well, I'm thinking especially of your brothers, God rest them, but that they died by suicide, what, 10 years apart or whatever. Did you notice any change in the attitude of the of your friends and family and church and wider?
Well, you often hear people, you know, making comments about, you know, about people committing suicide, and it used to be very hurtful, you know. You know, that's in that family, you know, that.
Well, the selfish one was a big one, in Donegal.
You know, exactly, you know,
selfish politician, years ago.
Yeah, and you know, one of my brothers was actually in hospital, and when he took his own life, he was actually in hospital for treatment for very severe depression, and he was taking off all his medication, and he went missing in the hospital, and they didn't know where he went, and they were phoned down here to Donegal. See, they came down home and whatnot, you know, and he was actually found in the grounds of the hospital where he had, But that terminology of committing suicide, people should try and think of, you know, that's not what they're doing, they're not committing anything.
Okay.
So, I just come in there.
Yeah, that's John.
In relation to people's attitudes, now, what I found was that people didn't know how to react towards me.
Okay.
And I used to actually find it very consoling when people would mention my son's name and ask me about him, but very, very few people did. And I've learned an awful lot from that. Because prior to that, like a lot of us, I suppose, on occasions I'd cross the street to avoid someone and have done it.
Yeah.
But since I lost my son and knowing I will actually now cross the street to talk to the person that's been bereaved.
Okay, well done.
And in relation to that, people would ask me, particularly where you've lost a lost a son or lost a wife or that, whatever. What I say to people is, just if you meet someone and you're talking to them, just mention the person's name to them. You know, how's John or how's Chris or whatever. And then if they want to talk about him, they will. And if they don't, they won't. And if they want to talk to him and they get consolation out of that, from my experience, it's absolutely fantastic. And that's the one thing I would say to people. Try to take that on board and talk to people and say hello to them.
Okay. By the way, the Suicide to Survive number is 1895 77 577, and I'll give out, I did Pieta House and Samaritans again. I'll do them again at the end of the programme. But John, thank you indeed, Tony, Helen, Bob Carley, Michael O'D, Peter for Simons and the other callers. 51551, my chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.